Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So at the end of the hour here, in a way, one of the most famous English novels of the 20th century is all about this World Cup ambivalence, about the steamy, raw world of Latin culture and the proper, ambitious sterility of the much more prosperous world of Northern Europe. Spain versus Britain, Germany versus Argentina, and how the United States, culturally, is caught in the middle of it all. This is a novel about a lady. That's how the very ambivalent Ernest Hemingway first began The Sun Also Rises. Those lines and the entire first chapter of the book were eventually just tossed away. This week, Hemingway readers get a new experience with this old classic. Scribner is releasing a version of the book that's never been seen before. It includes lost chapters, extensive revisions, giving an altogether new portrait of Hemingway's creative process regarding this coming-of-age story of young men caught between life and living. Sean Hemingway is the grandson of Ernest Hemingway and editor of this new edition of The Sun Also Rises.
This new Hemingway Library edition of The Sun Also Rises really gets into that and how my grandfather wrote the book. And it was, I think he'd written many short stories and he'd tried to write a novel before, but and it was lost in the train station in Paris.
Crazy story.
At the Gare de Lyon, have been terribly frustrating for him. But after going to Pamplona, he really knew he had a great subject, and he went at it furiously. He knew he had to write a novel. He'd been writing so many wonderful short stories, but he needed a novel.
And, you know, in our time, it would never happen that you'd lose a whole novel, you know, because it would be on some hard drive somewhere. In many ways, that might have been the best thing that ever happened to him, having to recreate those scenes and really confront that language again to have something completely lost so that he wasn't just re-editing some version.
I think that's a really good point. We'll never really know exactly what that first novel was, but I don't think it was the masterpiece that The Sun Also Rises is. And I think he learned a tremendous amount in Paris, you know, mingling with all these other great writers and artists and luminaries. It was a great training ground for him.
Do you think he fell in love with that time and was aware of it in the way that we are so aware of it when we read this book?
It's funny because I think in some of the deleted passages that are included in this new edition, he disparages a bit the quarter and his colleagues, and yet he clearly sat at the foot of Gertrude Stein and learned from her and was greatly influenced by her. I think he was very caught up in it. I mean, he was living it. Later on in his life and works like A Movable Feast, he really goes back and reflects differently on it.
What do you hope that the reader gets from this particular edition that would be different from someone coming from The Sun Also Rises the very first time?
Well, this edition allows you to really pull back the curtain and look at the creative writing process that my grandfather went through. And it's amazing to think that this was his first novel to be published and how the problems he had writing it and how he went about writing it. And he really he threw himself into it. He wrote the first draft in 2 months. And later he said that he wrote too quickly and he had to do a lot of editing. So you can see that. You can see examples of the first draft and how different it is from the final product and all the changes that he did to finish the book and polish it and make it the way he wanted it to be.
You know, in many ways you describe the collaboration and the friendship between Ernest Hemingway, other writers of the time, Hudson, Ford Madox Ford. Where do you think your grandfather stands in comparison with those two writers who were also struggling with some of the same issues of what's going on in the 20th century?
I think my grandfather is right up there. I mean, he chose as subjects in his books to deal a lot with the consequences of war, both World War I and World War II and the Spanish Civil War. War was a subject for him that was a powerful subject that he wrote about a lot. Of course, he was also a naturalist like Hudson, and he loved to write about hunting and fishing and experiencing nature. I think my grandfather is right up there with those writers, and that's part of the amazing thing about this book, I think, that it has appealed to generation after generation of people, especially young people reading it. It has a vitality and a fresh quality that it still resonates today. I think what's fascinating in the material that's included in this new edition is this unpublished foreword that he wrote for it and how serious it is, how literary and how, I mean, he's sort of depressed really about the effects of World War I and how for his generation that has devastated everyone and that they can't move beyond it. And that's what you see in this book, and The Sun Also Rises, is that these broken people who can't move beyond the damages of the war. And some of the background of that is included in these discarded chapters from the beginning of the novel that Hemingway cut at the galley stage. But it's all still there. It's under the surface, as my grandfather used to like to say about his writing.
Do you think that foreword and this book speaks in many ways to the people 100 years after World War I who are wondering about this moment in time right now, that he's really speaking
today? I think it does, unfortunately, because around the world we continue to be involved in conflicts, not just America, in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we see the wars in Syria and the conflicts going on in Palestine. And I mean, the war is everywhere, and I think this book remains a very powerful reference point for seeing how damaged people are by war, whether it's physically damaged, like Jake Barnes, or whether it's someone like Bill Campbell or Brett Ashley who have been emotionally damaged. And there are thousands of people around the world who come back with post-traumatic stress disorder from war for serving their countries and have to go on and live their lives, and they do the best they can. But it is a phenomenon that continues.
Do you think the way this book was received and some of that part of the experience you get into in this edition constituted the happiest moments of your grandfather's life?
Well, I think he was delighted at the reception of it, and it was a success from the moment it was published. It was important to him, but in other ways, I think that he wasn't proud of the way the people act in the book. Mm. I mean, his mother wouldn't read the book because she felt it was too immoral.
Crazy, yeah.
Acts in it. But one of the interesting things, I think, in this new edition is it includes the original beginning of the book, which focuses on the bullfighter. And the story was originally going to be more about the bullfighter and the dissolution of a bullfighter, but that totally changed as he wrote the book. And in the end, the bullfighter becomes the character who is closest, truest to himself and his art.
What do you think he would say about this project and you? Would he say, get out of my desk? What are you doing messing around with all this?
That's a good question. You know, I never knew my grandfather. Right. He died before I was born, so I can only imagine what he would say. And I think it is true that he saved all of his manuscripts. I think he recognized that he was a great writer and that he would have a place in world literature. And by saving all of these manuscripts, he knew that they would be studied and examined and published eventually. So I hope that I think he would appreciate the care with which I've looked at these manuscripts and also the care with which I've tried to preserve his legacy, his huge legacy to America and the world.
Well, Sean Hemingway, are you a good fisherman?
I love to fish, yes, thank you.
All right, so he'd be proud of that, certainly. Sean, thanks so much.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sean Hemingway is a curator in the Department of Greek and Roman Art at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. He's the editor of the new Scribner's The Sun Also Rises, and he's also the grandson of Ernest Hemingway, the editor of this new edition. If you want to catch up on that conversation or listen back to anything on the program, check us out at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Pedro the Bull was a killer, king of the bullfight arena. He'd wipe up the floor with each brave matador, then have matador stew for his dinner. He heard the crowd shouting, ole! He met his master that day.
The bullfighter was a lady, and it was true love at first sight. Her red cape was waving, but pale.